The spirit of performance defines Acura. And now, it's electric. Introducing the all-electric ZDX, Acura's most powerful SUV yet. While what powers their cars may change, the energy that makes Acura never will. Crafted using the same formula that brought them electrified supercars and multiple IMSA championships, the ZDX has track-tested performance that packs an energy all its own. With a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system and up to 313-mile range on a single charge, and a Type S variant with an estimated 500 horsepower, the ZDX is everything they said electric could never be. It was built with the driver in mind, just like Acura has been doing since the beginning. We could talk all day, but the only way to experience this electric performance is to drive it yourself. Unlock the energy and order yours at Acura.com.
I'm Scott Wapner, and you're listening to CNBC's Halftime Report, the podcast, the most profitable hour of the trading day. We record this live weekdays at 12 Eastern. Listen in.
All right, welcome to the Halftime Report. I'm Scott Wapner. Front and center this hour, the sell-off, that hotter-than-expected CPI unnerving the market today. The investment committee with me on what all of it means for stocks and your money. Joining me for the hour, everybody's here at Post 9. Joe Terranova, Bryn Talkington is in the house, Steve Weiss and Jim Labenthal. Let's check the markets. We're down about 500 on the Dow. We're down across the board, as you know by now. Yields are up. CPI was hotter than expected. So I want to know from everybody today, Bryn, I'm going to start with you, of what changed today for the outlook for the market, if anything, if anything.
Well, I think everyone expecting to come in at 0.3 and that we're just going to cruise on and this rally is going to start back up, we're sorely mistaken. And I think that this last mile, this proverbial last mile that we're talking about, I think maybe longer than a mile. And if you look at core, and everyone likes to take things out, core X shelter, core X used cars, core XX, you're still have like a four handle if you annualize this 1 month return. And so I think that as a taking today's data point, coupled with the strong manufacturing data and Thursday's sell-off last week, it does feel like this market's tired, it's consolidating. And so I think that earnings will be strong, but right now, I think really positioning as an investor or a trader, you need to think through certain sectors that you may have been overweight going into the next few months, but I think you're gonna continue to see weakness in some certain sectors.
Okay, Jim Labenthal, our resident bull, really, as much as anybody has been for as long as anybody has been, anything change for you today? Does your outlook have to be rethought?
Well, the direct answer to your question is there on the margin something changes, right? You got to at least push the rate cuts out a little bit. Maybe now we're fixating on two instead of three. Forgive me, Scott. I just want to parse the comment, resident bull. I am bullish. You're absolutely right. I have, however, raised some cash over the past few weeks, trimming NXP, trimming NVIDIA, selling Boeing, Thermo Fisher. So I've got cash on the sidelines that I'm ready to put to work. And I'll tell you the truth, Scott. I came in. I woke up this morning. I was actually ready to buy. I was waiting for that CPI report, and when it came out, everything that I wanted to buy started going down, and it's been going down ever since. So I'm sitting on my hands, and I think that I'm emblematic of the markets right now. I don't think this is a fatal condition, but I'd like the market to find its footing, and then I'll come back in. But right now, today, there's absolutely no reason for me or any other participant to buy.
So maybe, Joe, we throw the whole Fed cut timeline and the market's expectation of the timeline into some bit of question. Wolf today weighs in and says, okay, June looks off the table, but earnings remain solid. Mm-hmm. And the fact that you have an earnings outlook that remains solid and a Fed chair who they expect to remain dovish in the months ahead, then, okay, you'll get choppier trade, but the trend is still intact for those very reasons. Earnings still going to be good, economy still good, Powell's still going to be leaning dovish. We still believe, I think, the next move is a cut, not a hike at this point. Today doesn't change that in any way. Do you agree with the way that Wolf has this outlook?
100%. Federal Reserve is looking for the reasons to cut. Today did not give them the reason to cut. We could debate why, we could point towards fiscal spending. We could say, okay, the next cut ultimately, obviously, is not June, it's going to be July. Remember, in January, we were pricing in six or seven cuts in 2024. Now we're down to two. Does it change anything about the way you want to invest? I don't think so at all. And I think if you look at today and you see the way the market is trading, it's consistent with the way the market has traded all year. I have not wanted to own real estate. Today, you don't want to own real estate.
Yeah, the home builders are getting hammered
banks.
Today. They're below the 50-day. The regional, well, the Russell is the worst. To your point, right, rates spike or we get nervous about rates being higher for longer, where does it show up first? The Russell. Russell's down 2.5% today for those obvious
And guess
reasons.
What's okay today? Momentum is a factor. It's okay today. And 7.5% of the S&P represented by NVIDIA and Meta, when that's higher, that softens the blow as well. So the AI halo is still there. I think the playbook for 2024 is firmly entrenched.
All right, Weiss, to you last but not least, obviously. Anything change in your mind? From this read today?
I think it has to, frankly. Today's not a bad day. I mean, you talked about down 500. We're still talking about the market's down 1% plus, which is nothing given where we've come from. But it's not really changing for my investment case. I'm strictly bottoms-up fundamental. Of course, I pay attention to rates because that will influence, macro will influence my bottoms-up fundamental investing. But to me, this puts any rate cut this year in doubt. Because I anticipate tomorrow's PPI being stronger than what the market's looking for, number one. And that's not even incorporating the run we've seen in commodities. So if you go out to the next numbers, you're going to continue to see hot numbers. So I think that's a mischaracterization of Powell, frankly, saying he's dovish. He's neutral right now. He's not dovish.
Well, the last comments that he made were more dovish than not.
Right. Okay. But still, his policy is neutral. So forget about the words. Look at where the policy is. It's neutral. And there's absolutely no reason for him to cut right now.
Some say the policy is too tight where it is right now.
Why would they say that? The economy is still really strong. You're looking for, we just heard it, stronger earnings this quarter. That's not a good thing if you're looking for a cut because you've still got inflation way above the target and going further away from the target.
PCE has been a much better read than either CPI or PPI.
Right, but you got to look at all of them together.
Yeah,
right.
But the Fed fixates
on PCE. Let's wait for the next PCE number.
Well, of course,
we
ratchet everything up, right? It's
right.
Like the
exactly.
next one, the next one of these, the next one of
exactly.
those.
So the question is, do you think the Fed will cut rates with a stronger economy than they anticipate, which Powell talked about, with strong corporate earnings as evidence of that strong economy, and with inflation ratcheting up?
Well, it's not necessarily ratcheting up. I mean, your words are up a tenth hotter.
Up relative to expectations. It's the trend. Don't forget, it's the trend.
The trend is still down.
The trend overall is down, but now we're starting to see it move up, right? Last month, we saw numbers that were slightly hotter. And my view is, from commodities, we're going to see them move even hotter. So that's my concern. So I think any rate cut's in doubt at this point. Right now, if push comes to shove, I'd say you'll get at least one. But it's not a slam dunk,
okay.
is my point.
So in about 40 minutes, you're going to hear from the Chicago Fed President, Austin Goolsbee. You're also going to hear from Richmond Fed President, Tom Barkin. That's 12:45. So we have a little time to wait. But the good news is we can bring in our own Steve Leisman, our senior economics reporter, to game this whole thing out about what, if anything, changed today. And I think, if anything, I don't know, it validates everything that all of these Fed speakers have been saying day after day after day. No rush. We can afford to wait. Maybe we'll do it later in the year. How would you assess what today does to how they think today?
I think that's right. I do think, though, I believe it was Steve Weiss talking about this, that you do have additional risk now, Scott. Risk from two standpoints. One is that they don't cut at all, and the other is that maybe they have to reverse course. I don't think that's the next likely thing that the Federal Reserve does. I think it believes, and this is an important point, I think. The Fed believes it's restrictive. If you look at where they are now, where they believe they're projected to go this year, and I think I have a bar chart on this, and what they think the neutral rate is at 2.6%, that's the median, they think they're restrictive. They think the rates currently are in a place where actually maybe even a bit too high. There are the three numbers that I think are the key. So relative to the left side of your chart, where they're at, and relative to what they believe the long run rate is, there's, you know, call it 2.5 percentage points in there, which means that even if inflation runs a percentage point hotter than they expect, there's still room for them to believe they're restrictive. This is the underlying belief about why the Fed believes rates can come down.
Right.
The trouble is the optics of this, Scott, and the credibility issue, which is that I do not believe the Federal Reserve will be cutting interest rates while the actual inflation numbers are stalled and not improving.
They also have to be incredibly mindful, Steve, of what might happen if they wait too long to cut. Either a mistake or ruining this great story that they seem to have been able to write. The book isn't finished yet. Maybe the market and some market participants have gotten ahead of themselves trying to write the ending too early. But nonetheless, they don't want to mess the story up.
I think that's right. But I do think there's an interesting conflict here between the theory and the practice. I think it was maybe Joe who was just saying the earnings are coming in, the economy is strong. None of this should be happening. All of this violates the theory of what happens when you raise interest rates at the speed of light to 5.38% and you don't get essentially a pop in the unemployment rate to speak of. You don't get a slowing of the economy and you keep going ahead further. So the Fed needs to be mindful here that the theory of it being restrictive is not necessarily taking place in the reality of the economy. And that's what might put them on pause. I think one of the good and the bad things about Powell not being an economist, I'll tell you the good part, is he's not married to the dogma of the theory. And I think that that means that he will reverse course if he needs to. If he sees the economy not, you know, the way it's behaving, he'll react to that much more than he will hunker down into the theory of the fact that they're restrictive and it should be happening.
I think what we're learning too, you know, Steve, is that this once in a 100-year event of the pandemic has made it virtually impossible for economists, policymakers, or anybody else to have a full understanding about what it means to go into that kind of event and then come out when you pile stimulus upon stimulus on top of it. And then when you introduce the level of rate cuts and the speed in which they did it, to your point, you would assume things would happen when maybe they wouldn't. We're trying to get our arms around this still.
Yeah, we're all learning as we go here. And I think that requires a bit of humility on all parts, on the part of the bulls, on the part of the bears. We have not had the disaster that a lot of people predicted. The recession didn't happen. You're right, Scott. There are abiding concerns. At some point, we're going to turn around and say, you know, Mr. Chairman, you may be too restrictive here. Look at this happening in the economy. We don't really have this thing yet, which is really an important point, Scott. And I think we've had this discussion. If I get called on for a question to the chair, I would be really happy to say, Mr. Chair, how could you be missing this unbelievably bad thing happening in the economy with your rates so high? I don't see what that is, which, by the way, I think it underpins the investment thesis on equities here, which is the investment thesis on earnings and the outlook there. Mm-hmm. But I also think, you know, it does introduce some risks you have to be mindful of. We were talking about the idea that the March inflation numbers were not going to be what you expected. But there is, of course, an echo of last year where we had those high rates at the beginning and then it came down during the year. So if you're looking for a bullish case here, something to hang a hat on, you might say, well, there's some residual seasonality out there that will work itself out during the year and will be helpful down the road, and they'll get those numbers, just not as quickly as you expected.
Sure. I appreciate it very much, Steve. Thank you. Our senior economics reporter, Steve Leisman. He's at the Fed, of course, in D.C. because we get the minutes a little bit later, and that's an interesting and important event, too. Bryn, to Steve's point on the investment thesis intact, because the expectation is that earnings are going to be pretty good, right? Expectations have come in, but HSBC today says they're still too low. That expectations are just too low. Do we start getting these reports coming in and say, okay, that's why we thought that the thesis was intact?
Yeah, I think it's going to come down to security and sector. And just to kind of build on what Joe said earlier, I think that it's easier to know what you don't want to own, to say that's not intact. So it's like you don't want to own long duration bonds. You don't want to own small cap value. You don't want to own small cap growth. It's like stick to, I think, high quality tech, which could be the Qs, individual names, energy, industrials, which I know Jim likes. And so I think you really have to pick your spots, because I do think there's going to be a big separation between the wheat and the chaff, mm-hmm. especially in this earnings season, because the analysts are reducing estimates here, They're not increasing as
much. No, we went from like 10 to 5% in terms of earnings growth.
But that's a 10 to 5. That's a huge deal.
I understand.
Yeah.
But when you've been at negative earnings growth for quarter after quarter after quarter for a while, you'll take the 5.
We'll take the 5. And we all know the analysts always go too high and we come down. But I do think it comes down to these individual numbers. And I think that this market this quarter, especially when small and mid-cap growth, will not suffer fools. And I think you're going to see, if you even slightly miss, you're going to have like a 10 to 15% down, like we saw last quarter, by the way, and many other quarters. But I think this will be especially painful with the yield backdrop.
So on that note, I do want to get into what areas of the market may be most vulnerable. But you gave us a list of your sort of must-own areas after the CPI was released in light of what the market's doing with the Dow down more than 500 and yields obviously up. Must-owns, according to Joe Terranova, commodities, not just the refiners, metals and materials, insurance companies and private equity.
Yeah.
Why'd you put your list of those three?
Okay, so far month to date, the S&P is down 2%. Are we on the cusp of a deeper decline? No one knows the answer to that. But even if we are, it is imperative that you own commodities in this environment. You mentioned energy, you mentioned metals. I would add upon that steel. Steel Dynamics is a name that's contained in the JOTI ETF. Vulcan Materials, Martin Marietta. Extending beyond that, Steve, I know you've done a nice job with Archer Daniels Midland. You could throw Bungie into that. You could throw Tech Resources. Secondarily, who has pricing power right now? Insurance companies have pricing power.
Yeah.
We own Progressive. We own Arch Capital in the ETF. And then lastly, if rates remain elevated, private equity continues to be the liquidity solution because lending standards for public credit will be tight and restrictive in that nature. That takes you to Apollo Management, KKR, Brown & Brown. Those are three areas of the market right now, even in the decline, you could go in and own.
What do we think of this, Weiss?
You know, I don't disagree with any of that. I mean, I was having a conversation yesterday with somebody who's been in the private market investing in insurance and in auto insurance. Numbers are through the roof. The profitability is unbelievable. We looked at one company last year, which unfortunately we didn't do, that was an auto insurer, subprime, and their cash flow estimates were exceeded by 50%.
Yeah.
I mean, those are real numbers. Look, for me, what I'm astounded by today, frankly, is that cat is flat, that deer is flat. Those would be the first ones that you would think would take gas with this kind of, with rates moving up. But in the pre-market, they did. So if you sold it then, you lost. But right now, it's unbelievable, as well as you see with Meta. So to me, this is, I don't know if it's cautionary that people aren't paying the proper amount of attention. I could see those stocks of Meta being flat.
Maybe because they don't think that the story's changed.
Right. And I think that, again, it goes back to your fundamentals. If you're basing your buying and your portfolio positioning on rates coming down, then I think you're making a mistake. So
let's just have, if I ask you the question, is the next move from the Fed a cut or a hike? How would you answer that question?
Next move from the Fed is no move.
No. Don't give me that nonsense.
No, that's not nonsense. It's factual.
The next
the
move that they
meet,
make, that's not a move.
They're not going to do anything.
Are they going to cut next or hike?
They're probably going to cut.
Okay, thank you. Jim Labenthal.
Well, hold on, Scott. That's not the answer. The answer
it is the answer. I
no,
just asked you the question.
The
is it a, what's their next move?
You're out there saying three cuts. You had them saying six cuts. Now it's three. It's probably going to go to two. And if you're
so
basing
your
case on that, then you're wrong.
If you're not.
Because so if you the
knew,
next move is
if
no
you,
move.
If, you knew, if you knew that the first move of the Fed at the beginning of this hiking cycle was going to be a hike,
okay, let me
you'd
ask
be
you
negative
this.
Like
what
you
if,
were.
What if the next move,
like you were.
What if the next move is not this year, but next year? What if it's not this summer, but it's
if you
the
want to start
Fed
pushing the timeline
year.
Back that far, then obviously that's a
exactly,
risk.
And that's my point.
Yes, but if you still know that the trend has changed, that you're at the end of a hiking cycle and the beginning of a cutting cycle, even if it's pushed off, doesn't Don't Fight the Fed work both ways, Jim Labenthal?
I agree. I stayed out of what you guys were just doing because I think we're missing a bigger point, at least to me, which is in the last few days, we've had two important data points. On Friday, average hourly earnings were up 4.1%. Today, the CPI headline is up 3.5%. You put those two numbers together, the consumer's doing better. Consumer doesn't feel like he's doing better, but the consumer is doing better. That means they're going to consume more. That means this economy is going to go higher, and it's going to permeate to all sections of the the economy, which is why, Steve, CAD is flat today. It's just those two numbers coming together.
It's not only areas of the consumer that are doing better. We've seen that clearly.
Look, the market is definitely going to be tested if the Weiss timeline comes to fruition. Now, I know that may not be his base case, but nonetheless, if you have to push cuts out that far, well, then we need to rethink valuations, right? Which right. some would say are already stretched. I've got notes about that today, too. UBS, well, they don't look elevated when compared to expected growth. So in the scenario in which growth is still going to remain good, Joe, and even if rates get pushed off, but if earnings are good, isn't that still bullish for stocks?
Yes, it's all about earnings. Yeah. It's all about profit margin expansion. It's all about the fact that we went through an earnings recession. We're coming out of the earnings recession. At some point, inevitably, hopefully, the Russell 2000 will join the S&P and the NASDAQ. And coming out of that earnings recession, the moment we know is not now. And I go back to where I began the show. For the areas of the market that have experienced pain in 2024, today did not alleviate any of that pain. In fact, it worsened it. So show me a regional bank, and I will look the other way.
But I want to know, like, okay, what about the sectors that have experienced no pain but the most gains since, say, March 1st?
Like
on the idea you're going to have broadening and lower rates. Materials, Joe said you have to own those.
Yep.
Well,
yes.
Those are up 5% since the beginning of March. Utilities, they're up 5% since the beginning of March. The utilities, why would you want to own utilities now if you think rates are going to remain sticky higher?
Right. So you would not, right? So utilities, these are, there's a few like NextEra, et cetera, but they're in general low growth. They're rate sensitive. And so there's a basket of rate sensitive sectors that you can just, the algos and the hedge funds will just short and not own. And so you're fighting against that tidal wave of those hedge funds and algos in those sectors. And so that's what I said at the beginning. What you don't own to me is easier to figure out than what you do want to own. And so I think that, to your point, commodities, you want to own that. And also like on energy and materials, while they've done good year to date, on a one-year number, they're still lagging. And so if you think about, like, you guys rebalance quarterly, right, from a momentum, but a lot of the big factor-based momentum models only rebalance annually or semi-annually. And so I think you haven't even picked that up into the next rebalance of some of these other momentum-type strategies, which can give energy, materials, and commodities even more of a whoosh, you know, going for the next few months.
What about, you know, these the mega-cap names that, like, NVIDIA is in correction territory, but it gets bought today? Is it still higher? I'm not even sure if it is, but it was earlier. A lot of these other mega cap names are in the red, but when talking about our dip buyers going to come in, Jim Labenthal gives us a shopping list today at the top, Apple and Amazon. So you're ready to buy some of these mega caps on some pullback?
I really wanted to buy today. I mean, I woke up this morning. I was excited to come on the show and say I'm adding to Apple, adding to Amazon. Different reasons, by the way. Apple had, until the CPI report, until the markets open, held that 168 level that I've been talking about. Now it's through it, and it looks like, you know, the 200-day sloping down, it's going to continue to go down, so I'll wait. Amazon, different story. It's in a position of strength. But again, with the market where it is right now, responding to the CPI, I'm just sitting on my hands. I do want to be clear about something, folks. I'm not calling for even a full correction in the market. I do think there is too much money on the sidelines, too many people who have missed out. I think you'll get a 5-7% pullback from the high on the S&P 500, and that'll be it. People will come in because this economy is strong. Joe's comments about profits are well made. So I'm not going to wait too long, but today, the news we've got, the reaction of from the market, which is entirely expected, This is not a day to
even
buy.
Even if Weiss is right, you have a number of people saying, you don't need cuts anyway in the current environment of what the economy is doing.
I agree with that statement.
So how can today people make the same argument? Well, the market's doomed cuts.
Listen, so let me succinctly say this. I said earlier, folks, the market is not in a fatal condition, but it's reacting to marginal data today that we got, which is on the negative. So there's going to be some profit taking, and we're seeing it, and some names that were up earlier are down now.
Both Steves are right, Leisman and Weiss, in that obviously the risks are elevated the longer inflation remains elevated.
If you want to scare me, you can. Tell me that rate hikes are coming. That would scare me.
Yeah,
that would
tell
me now we're in a fatal condition.
You may have to rethink to what degree you get scared if you think that rates are going to remain at this level at least for a longer period of time than you thought. You are expecting at least some rate cuts, maybe one.
So
but if it is, in fact, the Weissian none, or pushed into 2025. You can't tell me you don't need to rethink anything. You can't have it both ways.
On the margins. Yes, that's what I'm saying. And that's why I woke up this morning. I was ready to buy. New data came in. I changed my mind based on that new data. Now, to the point you're making, Scott, some stocks are going to labor under higher for longer interest rates, like discretionary spend, like airlines, autos, casinos, all those things. It's going to be harder for the consumer to spend if credit card rates stay where they are. But this is one piece of marginal data today. I already went through what the real earnings are doing for the average consumer. And as long as those weekly jobless claims continue to come in strong, by the way, Atlanta Fed GDP still at 2.4%, updated today. So it's not a fatal condition. It is a condition where today you just sit back, okay, so you be patient.
Bryn's not just sitting back and doing nothing. Yeah. So you sold a stock, and it's AbbVie. Yep. And I want to do that before we go to break. Tell us why you sold it. I think you've owned this for a while, right?
Yeah, like close to two years.
Why was today the time to sell that?
So it, in November, I think it got to 132, 133. Mm-hmm. It was at 180. It was like, this year has been a wonderful year for AbbVie. They made two big acquisitions in the fourth quarter, close to $20 billion. The market loved that. And it went to 180. I sold it at 178. And I just felt like it had a really good run. And I'm glad I did. I think that this quarter, April 26th, their earnings come out. Earnings estimates are down 5.6% year over year. I do want to see also one of the reasons. It's a big company with a high market cap. I do want to see how they absorb these acquisitions. And so I just took my profits. Wonderful company, happy to own it. But I moved on and went and I put the proceeds into Cowles and JEPQ, which are more diversified in sort of an individual name. Mm-hmm. And I can sit with them until I find another name I want to own.
All right. So we got a move in there. I thought we had a pretty good debate on where we stand today relative to CPI, stocks, rates, and everything else. Up next, more committee stocks on the move today. We'll give trades on Roblox and Taiwan Semi, Delta Airlines, news on all. We're back in two.
Are you following the Halftime Report podcast? What are you waiting for? Look for us in your favorite podcasting app. Follow the Halftime Podcast now.
Old Dominion Freight Line was built on keeping promises. With an industry-leading on-time delivery record and low claims rate, we keep promises better than any other LTL freight carrier because we treat every shipment like it's our most important one. Visit odfl.com to learn more.
Electricity, a big idea that's inspired countless new ones. From powering the light bulb to virtually powering our entire lives. 30 years ago, State Street launched the Spider S&P 500 ETF, SPY. A big idea that inspired the world to invest differently. And still does. What can you do with SPY?
Before investing, consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Visit SSGA.com for a prospectus containing this and other information. Read it carefully before investing. SPY is subject to risks similar to those of stocks. All ETFs are subject to risk, including possible loss of principal. Alps Distributors, Inc. Distributor.
All right, we're back. We're going to hit some committee stocks on the move today. Delta is certainly one of them. Jimmy, you own it on the back of earnings. EPS beat, revs miss. So we know that the outlook for air travel has been strong. You've cited it yourself almost every day. Ed Bastian talked about it with Phil today. Stocks reversed, though. What's up?
Profit taking. And I don't want to say that blithely. Why? Somebody stop, Steve. Just shush me.
Somebody sold it. Profit.
Shush.
You know they took profits.
Yeah, interrupted.
They may have taken a loss.
Stop. Stop. All right. Stock generated $1.4 billion of free cash flow in the quarter, paid down $700 million of debt. They're on track to pay down $4 billion of debt this year. Demand is strong. But look, the stock is up 16%, even after the decline today. It's up 16% year to date. It's up 30% in 6 months. And again, apropos of what we were talking about at the beginning, Scott, people come in today. Before the CPI, the stock was up 5%. People were willing to buy this. They get some incremental data. CPI is hotter. Maybe the Fed's on hold longer. And maybe that just increases the chances of a recession a little bit longer. That's been the storm cloud hanging over this stock for quite some time. Let me be blunt, folks. This is an opportunity to buy Delta. All right. This is, we talked about this being a trade. It's a trade that's languished for a long time. It's now coming out of that languishment.
All right.
It's going to go higher.
Any rebuttal?
Yeah.
I mean, it's no accident that we sat you guys next to
each other,
right?
Friend.
I'm still confused that Jimmy came in today wanting to buy stocks that were higher, and now that they're lower, he doesn't want to buy them. So that's, I'm still trying to work that out from the A block.
I spelled that out. What are you being purposely dense?
That was a good one.
We'll let the audience vote.
That was a good one.
Dense. I'm sure they will.
Taiwan Semi Weiss. Better than expected increase in March sales. Yeah. The fastest pace in a year. You own that one.
I do, and I'm waiting for it to go up 10% to buy more. Sorry, Jimmy. Look, the fundamentals are great. We know that they're capacity constrained. We know that they're adding capacity in the U.S. If you want to build AI chips, if you're not doing it yourself, you're going to Taiwan Semi to do it for you. So it's still a cheap stock, still below market multiple. You want to put money here.
All right, Bryn, what about Roblox? So Kathy Wood's buying more, right? Shares, so they still hire? That's after ad tech player PubMatic. They hired them to help juice sales of their new video ads displayed on virtual billboards, according to the Wall Street Journal. There's the stock.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think that's a market-moving event. I guess it is. I mean, I think I've said before, I think this stock is stuck between this, like, 30 to 40 range. We're at the high end of that. I think until they come out with more profitability, which I know Dave Baszucki's like, I'm putting the money back into the company. I think the stock is a little bit capped out once you get $40, $45.
All right, Contessa Brewer has the headlines for us today. Hi, Contessa.
Hi there, Scott. Six former Mississippi law enforcement officers were sentenced on state charges this morning to 15 to 45 years in prison for the torture and abuse of two black men in a racist attack in January 2023. The six men who called themselves the Goon Squad were ordered to give up their law enforcement certificates permanently. The state prison sentences will run concurrent to federal sentences. Three sons of a Hamas leader were killed in an Israeli airstrike in Gaza. He confirmed those deaths to the Al Jazeera satellite channel today and said it would not affect Hamas's ceasefire demands. Israel has not commented. Meanwhile, Palestinians living in tent camps in the southern Gaza city of Rafah are celebrating Eid today, marking the end of the Muslim holy month of Ramadan. Those festivities, however, have been overshadowed by the worsening humanitarian crisis in Gaza and Israel's anticipated ground invasion of Rafah. We'll keep our eye on it. Scott.
Contessa, thank you. Mm-hmm. Contessa Brewer. Up next, our calls of the day. We have a flood of bullish analyst activity on five key committee names today, which means we'll debate all of them after this quick break.
B2B selling is tougher than ever, and we feel your pain. If you're struggling to close deals, consider giving LinkedIn Sales Navigator a shot. This sales intelligence platform helps professionals like you engage high-value customers, drive higher revenue, and increase sales performance. Sales Navigator also guides you in targeting the right buyers, highlights key signals such as job changes or which accounts you should prioritize, and uncovers hidden hot prospects so you can find those buyers that are most likely to convert. Fueled by LinkedIn's 1 billion member platform, Sales Navigator gives you the most up-to-date first-party data, enabling you to unlock conversations with the people that matter. Right now, you can try LinkedIn Sales Navigator and get a 60-day free trial at linkedin.com/halftimereport. That is linkedin.com/halftimereport for a 60-day free trial. Let LinkedIn Sales Navigator help you sell like a superstar today. Just go to linkedin.com/halftimereport and get started.
All right, welcome back. Let's do some calls of the day now. We start with that one right there. It's Albemarle. Stock's under a little bit of pressure today, even though it got upgraded, Bryn, at Bank of America to buy from neutral. Price target goes to 156 from 137. They cite improving lithium prices. What do we think
here? Yeah, I think it's a great call. So you got to buy. If you're going to buy commodities or be in commodities, you kind of got to buy when there's blood in the street. Not when everyone's loving them. There's been blood in the street with Albemarle, SQM as well. This stock has been basing out around 120, 130 for the past few months. So I wouldn't be surprised to see us stepping in and adding to our position down here in the next few weeks. So I think good call. I think it goes higher long term.
Does this feel like natural gas to you? Because it's both are down 80% off their highs of 2022.
Lithium and gas aren't going away.
Okay.
Yeah. You looking to buy ALB?
Maybe.
Okay, you
maybe a little
know.
Natural gas as well.
Really?
Right, Jimmy?
Mm. All right.
He's not paying attention.
He's not paying attention.
don't wake him up. He's
thinking about General Motors, which is my
General
next
Motors.
Stock.
Jeez.
Price target to 46 from 43 at Morgan Stanley. It's Adam Jonas. says the EV slowdown's positive for GM.
Well, it is. I chuckled there because Adam Jonas has a love-hate relationship with this stock. Mm-hmm. I mean, he has an outperform rating on it. He wants to like it, but when you read his verbiage, he just hates it. I don't understand it. I mean, I don't understand it because it trades at around 5x earnings. Earnings estimates going up. And Mr. Jonas, if you're watching, I'm just teasing you a little bit. I appreciate your support of the company. Internal combustion engine vehicles are selling like crazy. People need them. The pricing has come down a little bit, but it's still highly profitable for GM. And when they report, I want to see what their share count is after that massive accelerated share repurchase.
Hello?
Jimmy's on the board of GM now.
Okay, I'll tell him.
I do understand.
He appreciates the support.
Look at that.
He's on GM's board.
Look at that.
I do understand love-hate relationships,
what a guy,
by the way.
Broadcom, added to UBS's top picks list. Joe, you on that?
Absolutely. It's a core holding in terms of generative AI at a reasonable valuation. And TSM is telegraphing an environment where we're seeing the recovery coming out of COVID for smartphones, for laptops, for other areas of the chip makers. And I think that bodes well for Broadcom, which has a much more diversified set of products.
But also benefits from AI, too. And that's
of course it benefits for it. And that's the reason why I believe it's a core holding. But there's other areas of the business that are now rising, and that's evidenced today by TSM.
Okay, so Disney's price target goes to 140 from 125 at Argus, reiterated by... I'm sure you appreciate the support of the company very much, as you articulated through General Motors. I don't know the name of the analyst at Argus, but you know you can reach out on your spare time. What do you think?
Thank you for your support, but I like the call. Look, I think what's important here to note about Disney is that the current multiple, you're now, if you're a long shareholder, you're expecting earnings outperformance, okay? The proxy battle's behind us. Now it's time to execute on the business plan. As I've been saying for quite some time, the biggest lever is DTC. It's Disney Plus. It's controlling costs so that the earnings there, which we're going to start getting in less than 6 months, come in bigger than expected.
All right, ServiceNow, price target, 900 from 885 at Jefferies, reiterated by Joe.
Jimmy, you like a trailing profit margin of 78%?
I do.
That'd be pretty good for GM, wouldn't it? Well, that's what ServiceNow is doing. They're delivering revenue growth of 25%.
Tell me more.
They're part of the AI story as it relates to software itself. Cash on hand continues to grow now at $2 billion, another core holding.
Okay, so we are going to take a quick break. When we come back, Mike Santoli has his midday word. We're watching 12:45 too, because we're going to again hear from Goolsbee and Barkin, and if we may hear from Leishman too on what they have to say about the CPI and their own map for interest rate cuts. And don't miss, by the way, CNBC's first ever Changemakers event. That's in New York City. It's all about women in leadership who are transforming the business world. For details, you can scan the QR code or visit cnbcevents.com/changemakers. Halftime's back after this. Welcome back. Our senior markets commentator, Mike Santoli, joining us now with his midday word. Can't wait to hear it. What's on your mind?
Well, first of all, just in terms of the short-term tactical stuff, it's at least interesting that for half the day, the S&P 500 is trying to make this 5150 area matter. That was where we closed last Thursday. After that drop, that's a 2% decline off the highs. It would seem a very, very modest, give back of the rally if that somehow ends up being where a stand is taken. But it is doing it the hard way, which is the handful of stocks. You have most of the cyclical stuff and most of the rate sensitives are down. So I know it's true and it's easy to say if the economy hangs in there, who needs rate cuts? But the stocks aren't really acting like we can be comfortable in the assumption that indefinitely at these yield levels, things like consumer cyclicals can hang in there and therefore the consumer can hold up. So we have the suspense that's been prolonged for another couple of months, assuming it goes through PPI tomorrow, in terms of where we're going to sit in terms of this equilibrium between, inflation growth and asset price.
Your point is obviously well taken. The key word, of course, that you used indefinitely, it goes to what Weiss was saying earlier. All right, we don't need rate cuts today, but if we start putting them off forever, we may have a problem.
Yeah, I just think inevitably the market is going to start to chafe under that because it's going to go through the what-if scenarios. And remember, if, let's say, July somehow becomes the first rate cut, that will have been 1 year on hold at peak rates. That's a very long stretch for the Fed. It's happened to be a little bit longer at times, but not much. And so you inevitably have this idea of, like, really, where is this cycle at, and can we punctuate that inflationary period or not? So I'm not alarmist about it. You know, this market is just doing very normal things right now. You're playing with house money, but it does make it a little bit of a trickier setup.
Yeah, no, always measured, Mike. You are. I'll see you on Closing Bell for more of your insights then. That's Mike Santoli, our senior markets commentator. Coming up, we're standing by for the first Fed reaction to today's CPI print. Goolsbee, Barkin, we said they're speaking in about 30 seconds from now. We'll try and have those headlines for you, too, when we come back. All right, we're back. Gold rallying more than 10% to start the year. B of A today ratchets up its forecast for gold and copper. Let's kick these around. All right, Bryn, so gold remains one of their favorite metals. Been on a run. They're saying $2,500 an ounce by Q4. Copper goes to $93.21 per metric ton. So you've got Freeport, obviously, is one way to play this, yep, which is what you own. But you also own the uranium miners, yep, and BHP. But what are your sort of broader actionable thoughts for our viewers on this?
So I think gold, first of all, you have twofold here. You have, you know, number one, you have the Chinese have been for the past couple of years and Russia buying gold. You also have, if rates stay at this level, by the end of this year, December 2024, the annual interest on our debt is going to be $1.6 trillion. So I think that is a macro play that people like Stan Druckenmill, et cetera, are moving into gold. I think that from an actionable item, gold is very overbought right now. I like BHP here. It's iron ore and copper. I think it's a derivative adjacent play to China, as well as when iron ore firms up, you have an undervalued company that has a little over 5% dividend as well.
Okay. Joe?
Freeport McMoRan gives you a little bit of everything. The free cash flow generation is increasing, the exposure to copper, limited supply, and then the gold revenues as well. I mentioned yesterday Tech Resources. That's another way to play it. It's reasonably valued. You can look at a company like Ivanhoe. Ivanhoe is a little bit more rich in valuation. I agree with Bryn on BHP. That's another way to play it as well.
Weiss, you playing this at all? You've never, you know, as long as I've known you, yeah, and you've been on this program, this is not a knock at all. Just, yeah, it's a fact.
Yeah.
You have not liked gold, right? Because you said you can't value it. You've made that case.
Yeah, I don't know how you value gold. It's an emotional buy. It's an emotional sell.
Sure, but there are times where it works, and maybe we're obviously in one of those times for whatever.
Exactly, but
you think
I know if I come in, that's going to be the end of the time it works. So
like most everything else.
So they don't get mad at me. I'm not going in.
That's kind of like when you walk into a restaurant that everybody is like, all right, we're out. Check, please.
How is that different, though, than your buy in Bitcoin?
Because
good question, Joe T.
It is.
Good
it is.
Question.
A very softball question, thank you.
Okay.
Because I'm betting on the momentum in marketing from BlackRock, from Fidelity, from tons of other firms that are bringing people in. So I'm betting on the marketing strength. Bitcoin just happens to be the vehicle I'm using to play their marketing strength.
Okay.
Period. There's no business use case. For gold, I've seen charts. People say it's an inflation hedge. I could show you charts that show it's not an inflation hedge. It's a poor inflation hedge. People say that, yep, you know, accretion value. I could show you where it's been up and down and up and down. So, you know, if I can't do a bottoms-up analysis on it, I'm not going to do it.
You don't like the marketing, the late-night commercials on gold?
No,
yeah,
no.
Weiss.
If I can't do
bottoms-up analysis on it. Okay. All right. Jimmy.
Well, you know what I'm going to say. So, okay. I mean, Cleveland Cliffs, steel. Steel is obviously in huge demand here. You're going to see pricing going up. This specific company has controlled costs better than any other steel manufacturer. And you've got this U.S. steel deal, which, however it plays out, it's put a bid to the whole sector.
Why are you laughing?
Cleveland Cliffs. Never heard that before.
Never ends. All right. We're back.
I mean, we're talking about metals. What do you think I'm going to talk about?
Steel Dynamics.
talk about MP. We could talk about MP Corp. Neodymium prices going up. I mean, everything's going up. The whole comment about commodity prices going up, look at neodymium, look at MP Materials.
All right. Okay. We're back after this. We're going two big winners and two big losers. Kava Group, they're outperforming the market. Upgraded today to a buy. Take a look, near 5%. Axon Enterprises leading the S&P 500 today on a down tape. Deckers is a loser today, as is Rocket Companies. Talk about, you know, obviously given mortgages and what's happening in the housing market today. That is a tough day right there, down 11%. We've got finals coming up next. Join me on Closing Bell today as we take you through this final stretch, and it could be an interesting one. Josh Brown's going to be with me here on set. Jan Hatzius, too, chief economist, Goldman Sachs, get his first take on today's CPI and what he thinks it now means for the future of rate cuts, and Christina Hooper, too. All right, let's do some final trades. Steve Weiss. I'm going to go to you first.
Look, the 2 years.
I'm going to get you out of the way early.
Thank you. The 2 years hanging out here at almost a 5% yield. Mm-hmm. It's a good place to be, whether you want to hide from the market or just book, you know, a nice return. That's not far off, by the way, from the historical S&P return. So I like putting money in there. We'll see when the auction results come out, and we'll see if PPI, if that comes out, even hotter. So I think you'll be able to buy it close to a 5%.
Okay. Farmer Jim.
All right, so I already said I think this market's going a little bit lower, but if you need to step in, and you already heard me on GM, Cliffs, and Delta, AMAT, Applied Materials.
Is this one of the areas, you think that area specifically is at risk at this point, chips, just because of how well that many of those stocks have done?
Yes, but I think it's the pause that refreshes, and that's the only way I can say it. Yes, I think we come down a little bit, but by the end of this year, you're going to be very happy that you buy AMAT or any of those other names.
Right, because it's not just an NVIDIA story. Obviously, you could put up a chart of since the bottom, or certainly since, you know, March, and it's been a massive run for a lot of those names. Brent Talkington, good to see you back here post 9.
Thanks. I'm going to stick with BHP. It is just at its 200-day moving average. If it can stay above it, I think we have legs to run much higher.
Somebody asked me for the ticker of the Joe T.
Really?
Yeah. They did. They did.
Got a question that.
I wasn't sure if it was a joke or what, but... At any rate, what's your final trade?
Well, obviously, it's Allstate. We could see that. One area to avoid those regional banks.
All right, good stuff. I'll see you in the bell.
You've been listening to CNBC's Halftime Report, the podcast. You can always catch us live weekdays at 12 Eastern, only on CNBC.
All opinions expressed by the Halftime Report participants are solely their opinions and do not reflect the opinions of CNBC, NBC Universal, their parent company, or affiliates, and may have been previously disseminated by them on television, radio, internet, or another medium. You should not treat any opinion expressed on this podcast as a specific inducement to make a particular investment or follow a particular strategy, but only as an expression of an opinion. Such opinions are based upon information the Halftime Report participants consider reliable, but neither CNBC nor its affiliates and/or subsidiaries warrant its completeness or accuracy, and it should not be relied upon as such. To view the full Halftime Report disclaimer, please visit cnbc.com/halftime-report-disclaimer.
Sometimes it takes a different approach to help you unlock your true potential. With Capella University's game-changing FlexPath learning format, you gain relevant skills you can apply to your career right away. Earn your degree from an accredited university and be confident in the quality of your education. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu. Capella University is accredited by the Higher Learning Commission. Learn more at capella.edu/accreditation.